The doctor explained her insides were a rocky place where my seed could find no purchase.
That's right. We watched Raising Arizona this week on The Movie Gap, the podcast that has you scream.
How have you not seen that? How have you not seen that? How have you not seen that? How have you not seen that?
How have you not seen that? How have you not seen that?
Welcome to the Movie Gap. I am your host, Chase Austin, and as always, the repeat offender across the table. If his name's not Nathan Arizona, you get free furniture. It's Bryce Perkins.
What's up, everybody? How's it going? Hi.
Hi.
That was good. I was actually expecting something more rude or something, but I could actually,
the baby stealing.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
The baby stealing guy who loves the baby and wants to be a good father or mother.
I'm
not going to assume
always
your gender.
Yelling, also baby stealing, prison escapee, pre-Shawshank.
Yeah.
Inspiration for Shawshank.
It's the same shot.
Yeah, for sure.
A couple lifts I've noticed.
I've
noticed a lot of people lift it from this movie, too.
Yeah. Whoa, wait a second. Who am I talking to?
Whoa.
Coming
Pause.
In hot.
Hold your roll. You haven't been introduced yet. How dare you? How dare you speak on mic without being introduced? Nobody knows who you are.
It's true.
Nobody knows who you are yet. Does anybody have a guess?
I do. Can I guess?
Yeah, you can guess.
Well, I'm going to say, I know for sure it's probably a fan favorite. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Well, of all the fan favorites, this is the fan favorite.
This is the fan favorite?
Wow.
Okay, well then that could mean...
Lowercase t.
That it's only one person.
Mm-hmm. Careful, since we're doing a Coen Brothers movie.
What did I just say? What did I just say?
Who is that? Who the fuck is that? I'm trying to recognize their voice.
Just don't say Mike Yanagita, okay? That's...
Wait, who is that? I don't even know who that is.
From Fargo. Never
mind. Yeah. Oh, okay, okay. Well, we'll get into that. Hey, you know, it's about how I don't know movies, okay? So, hey, I'm in character here, baby. I'm a man of consistency, if anything.
Did you get that a lot growing up?
Yeah. 100%.
Okay. We'll get into
round,
it.
Data,
oh my
you
gosh.
Name it. I got it all.
Data,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Who, by the way, is having a second coming. Lee Kwang Hawk. What's his name?
Oh.
From Everything All at Once.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
I thought you were talking about Data from Star Trek.
Yeah, from Star Trek.
Oh, no. That makes no sense.
The racism was weird back then. What's going on?
I mean, never mind.
Anyway, well, I still don't know who this is. All right, I'm going to guess. If it's the fan favorite, then it could be only one person. That's Bryce Levi. Oh, wait, that's me. Shit. Okay, well, I have no idea then. You're just going to have to introduce them.
It's Keith Wong!
The fan favorite.
Keith, what was the last movie you were on with?
And now that we have introduced you, you don't talk for the rest of the episode.
Yeah. That's the bit.
That's the bit.
What was the last?
Last movie we did, The Net.
Yes.
God,
yes.
Was it like 2 years ago?
Yeah. It was pre-COVID. It was.
Was that pre-COVID?
Guys. It's been a very long time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah. You were in studio.
Yeah.
In the old studio.
Yeah.
But you popped in.
You did do some pop-ins.
Yeah,
that's right.
And that's what it is.
For the New Year's episode. Last year. This year didn't get the call. Didn't get the text.
I will take the blame, but it was not on purpose. I promise you that.
Okay. As long as it wasn't on purpose.
Yeah. It makes it better, right? It makes it better.
I like that everybody else we send the link to is like, I guess I have to do this. He's like waiting.
Yeah. He's like,
yeah, I know it's coming up. They're going to ask me.
No, but of course we would, you know, love to have you on optimally, or as many times as possible. But yeah, that's, I'll take the blame on that one for not, for just assuming you would be too busy or something, you know, I don't know.
No. You hit your Asian quota. Like one.
It really doesn't look good that like we had him on pre-COVID and then after COVID, we're like, No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
It's going to bring us laughs.
Oh, my God.
No, we love Asians here.
That sounds like a Chili's slogan gone wrong or something. What was that? What was this, Fridays? TGI Fridays. We love Asians here. Food. Okay. Well, now that we're all thoroughly canceled, well, me and Chase anyway, we can get on. You can update us on how you've been.
I've been good.
Yeah.
I've been, the last movie I saw in the theater was the Avatar thing.
Ooh. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Way of Water, what'd you think?
Okay. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. For a 13-year movie in the making, yeah, I'm just going to say, okay.
Yeah, right.
No disrespect for the graphic design and the arts and all that stuff.
Okay.
Did you see it? Yeah.
3D?
No, yeah.
IMAX and all that?
Regular.
I will say I do have acquaintances, and I won't out them or anything for security purposes.
Probably Ed.
No, neither confirming nor denying any name you say. It was a group of friends of mine that took mushrooms and saw it in 3D and IMAX, and they, surprise, loved it.
Totally get this movie.
So,
now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So there is, if anyone's listening and wondering if it is possible to think the movie is great, there's your answer.
You know, like,
other than that, I think I think everyone's consistently just been like, meh.
That's because it has no cultural impact. The first one, which is the biggest film of all time, except maybe this one overtook it. I don't know. I don't think it did. I think it's actually number three or whatever. But or it might have beat Avengers. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Cameron is so good at directing, specifically action. He knows everything about it. Like, he's a master. But I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't care about this story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the first one was, you know, Elizabeth Olsen just aggressively boring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's why I'm just going to skip this one.
Which I still kind of disagree with you about that on Elizabeth Olsen, but I do agree with you on James Cameron.
Yeah.
It is. Terminator 2 is a fucking masterpiece.
The first Terminator is a masterpiece as well. Like, the guy was.
Wait, was that Cameron too?
Yeah.
The first Terminator?
Yeah, he did both.
Oh,
I
didn't know that. Huh.
And famously, Aliens.
Oh, right.
Remember the pitch, the story that has been, like,
Terminator in space?
No, where he walked into the studio for, you know, in Fox to pitch Aliens.
Uh-huh.
And he just wrote on a piece of paper, Alien, showed it to him. Drew an S, showed it to him. Put two lines through the S to make it a dollar sign.
Oh, that's right.
And showed it to him and put the paper down.
Wow.
And they just said, take my money.
That's it.
Do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't even have to slide it across the table.
Yeah, I did. Put it down.
That's why.
Message received.
Avatar 3 is just going to be a 3 with two lines through it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But yeah. No, so what else have you seen in the theaters, though? You go to the theaters a lot?
No, I really don't. I'm trying to think. Before that, I think we saw, oh, God, was it the Freddie Mercury Queen movie?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was also pre-pandemic.
Yeah, huge gap there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So what did you think of Bohemian Rhapsody?
I liked it.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I haven't seen it.
Did you see Elvis?
Not
the made-for-TV John Carpenter one, but the new one with Baz Luhrmann.
No. I've heard one person has said good things about that movie.
That one person was lying.
Okay.
That one person was Austin Butler, who, by the way, is now going by Elvis.
Wait, really?
No.
Oh, but okay.
He swears
he, I mean, he might
he's
as
like,
well be.
I don't sound like Elvis. I'm not copying that. And like, he just is still doing yeah. the character. I think he's got like a screw loose.
It's, he's probably speaking at R.I.P. Lisa Marie Presley's
yeah.
funeral.
At, like, probably ooh, as we speak.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
How ingrained he is, I think.
Yeah. Right.
You get lost in the character sometimes.
No. Yeah. Not if you just be an actor. Like, just act. It's pretend. Don't become the thing forever.
Well, that's, you know.
Jared Leto.
You know, some people are great and some people settle for mediocrity, Chase. And I think we just found out which one you are. Okay. Sorry, I got to go, guys. I have a meeting with my buddy Daniel. You know, Day-Lewis. We're going again, to Marlon Brando's grave together. It's been a while since we've been.
He doesn't keep the character afterwards. He just goes back to France and cobbles shoes.
Yeah. Right.
And then he's like, I don't want to act anymore. Oh, I'll do it.
I heard that he still only does things with his left foot. Anytime a movie stops rapping or raps.
What do you know about that movie, by the way, besides that he's in it and that's the name of it?
I know that he is in it and that's the name of it.
And does nothing with his right foot, right?
And does nothing with his right foot, yeah.
Your knowledge of that movie is just like Stewie singing it in Family Guy?
No, not even that. You know, just to straight up kill that bit, I'm just going to say not even that. But that's improv. Anyway, so, but yeah, I do have to, I'm not joking about meeting up with
leaving?
Him and, okay. and visiting Marlon Brando's grave, though, so we gotta get this done, okay?
I was going to visit Marlon Brando's grave, but instead I'm going to send a proxy in my place.
Ooh, a Native American proxy.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Good pull. Yeah. I saw that movie.
Not a movie.
Oh, shit.
It was at the Academy Awards.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the Golden Globes, so short round, won for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, which is a phenomenal film.
Very good film.
But then also, there were more awards given to people who weren't there than there were people who came up and like accepted.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, did you watch them?
No, I just saw the little clips.
Yeah, it was just like every time they would read one off, they're like, and they want to be here, but they're not. And then the last time it was Regina King was like giving out the award for best actor in a TV show. And she, like, you know, the teleprompter, like, after she reads the award winner, right? It was Kevin Costner for Yellowstone. And the teleprompter comes up and tells her, you know, what to say. And it says, like, Kevin Costner really wanted to be here. And then she just starts laughing. She's like, yeah, like, everybody that's not here really wants to be here. And then she keeps looking. She goes, but he is currently stuck in California where the floods are happening. So, like, he really couldn't be there.
But
it was, like, the fifth person who, like, couldn't be there because it's the Hollywood Foreign Press and there's a lot of problems with it.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Some
right,
people
right.
boycotting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So she was making a joke of it, but then it was a real thing. Like, he had a real excuse to not be
oh,
there.
Wow.
And then she was like, ah, fuck it, whatever.
Yeah.
It was great. You should look that up. Look up that.
That sounds fun. Yeah. It does. I mean, I care about the Golden Globes as much as I care about, you know, or as much as I cared about movies in general before I started doing this podcast, which is
not at all.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
You probably didn't even know they existed.
Yeah, I mean, the only Golden Globes I knew about were those nice big old boobies. You know what I'm saying?
Double canceled.
Right. Oh, shit, I'm out. Yep.
All right.
I really do got to go.
Well, okay. Let's get into this, all right? We've beat around the bush. We've had our fun. Let's get into some serious business. Bryce.
Yes.
Before I talk to you, Keith.
Yes.
Raising Arizona. What's your connection?
I did not see this when it came out. I'm older than you guys, as you may.
Whoa, remember. You heard it here first.
This came, when it came out, didn't I remember seeing the trailer and a couple images of the baby, you know, that they use. And then a friend of mine was telling me that I had to rent the movie. This was in probably 95.
Okay.
So the movie came out in 87.
Yeah, I was I was like the age of the baby when this, because I was born in January. Oh, yeah. This came out in April. So like I was like 3 months old.
Wow.
When this movie came out.
So then we rented it, and it was, I remember not fully understanding. It wasn't like any movie I'd ever seen before. Wasn't sure if it was a comedy. Wasn't sure if, you know, anything.
Interesting.
I remember Nicolas Cage was famous. He was his face and this his look.
Uh-huh.
But beyond that.
And this is early Cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very young. Super young.
Well, that's interesting, because I was wondering that when I was watching this movie, about what you were saying about like you didn't know what to think about it and stuff. I was wondering that.
Yeah.
Because it was hard for me to remember that it came out in 1987, because it has such a modern... anyway, but we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to discuss for sure.
Yeah. And then the only other thing I'll say, the person who recommended it said that they were... it was part of their movie studies class at UT, University of Texas. So they were saying like, interesting. You got to check this out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, the code, well.
Wait, so was this your...
We'll get into it.
Did you say this, was this your first time watching it all the way through, like straight through?
Yeah.
Cool.
Because I remember just, I wasn't into it at the time, didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Wasn't like anything I seen. Shut it off. And then over the years, I've seen clips and like...
Yeah, right.
So watching this movie this time all the way through, it was like piecing together all these little vignettes that I remember seeing.
Because
such the imagery of the scenes are so crafted.
Oh, yeah.
They've always stuck in my head.
Cool.
All right, Bryce.
Yeah.
You'd never seen it.
Correct.
Not even a little bit.
Correct. And I wasn't even...
Why? First.
Well,
why?
First, why not? Firstly, I wasn't even... You said you were about 3 months old. You were about the age of the baby. I wasn't even close to being born yet. As everyone knows, I was born in the year 2000. So I'm 23 years old.
You weren't even coming your dad's nutsack
I yet. Wasn't even that yet. There was many loads that need to be blown before I showed up. Oh, I hope my dad doesn't listen to this podcast anymore. Anyway, but no, actually, I was born in 88. So it was just before my time. And then, just kind of like actually, fell through the cracks.
Like, if this came out in April and you were born in February.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I was about the same age as the baby.
No, like your parents were probably boning when this movie came out.
That makes sense.
Right?
I was
What's
probably...
What's math on that? The February to April.
You look directly at the Asian. What is
it? Yeah. <what's, laughs> Well, look. In my defense, I'm racist. No. In my defense, it was either look at you or look at Bryce. Who am I going to look at for math?
I gotta. What's the timestamp on that? I gotta grab that soundbite.
In my defense, I'm racist.
Yeah.
No, come on, April is the fourth month, and February is the second month. So 10 months. So like they were just making eyes at each other. They weren't really going to start boning for another month.
Okay, gotcha.
You know what? Unless they watched it a month, like your parents aren't like...
So
they probably got to the movie.
They probably waited a month to go see it so that the crowds would die down. And then when they were in the movie theater, they decided to bone in the movie theater.
What I think is that they were driving home and your mom was like, I want a little critter.
Yeah.
I want a little critter.
Yeah.
And your dad was like,
And my dad was all like, right. was like, yeah, sure. And in his mind, he was like, please be like Holly Hunter's character in the movie where the shit's a barren, you know, or whatever. Where the shit's a rocky place where my seed can't lay or whatever.
Well, he was like,
he'd already had two by then. I wouldn't blame him. Okay. I just wouldn't blame him if he, no, he loves me. You know, all jokes aside.
Baby wants to fart.
It is highly likely that I was conceived to this movie or my life was inspired by Nicolas Cage's performance. My creation was inspired by Nicolas Cage and Holly Hunter's chemistry on screen.
Electric.
It honestly is though. Yeah. I mean, not obviously. I mean, it is. Oh, yeah. Dude, right. We'll get right. into right. it. Okay,
we haven't even started. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Actually, you know, they watched the movie and everything, and then my dad turned to my mom and he was like,
"Pounding you might just be the therapy I need."
Got to get my Vegeta drops in, baby.
All right. Minute on the clock.
Okay.
Back of the DVD, back of the VHS. We're in Blockbuster. Let's go back to 1987 or 1986 when it would have appeared on shelves. Or, I mean, 1988. No, I went the wrong way.
Yeah, you very much did. Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to just leave the math.
Yeah, we've all determined. We've discovered that.
All right. So the year is 1988. You're in Blockbuster. Uh-huh. Not you, as we know. You were barely born.
Right.
But like, if anybody was walking through Blockbuster,
right, and they're
see Raising Arizona yep. on the shelf.
They want to know what it's about.
They're going to pick it up. They're going to like, oh, some people lounging on a mm-hmm. on some chaise lounges in the yeah. sun. They look white trashy. Let me see what the back of this VHS box says. What do they read? 1 minute, go.
Hi and Ed are the main characters of this story, and they are trash people. Well, Hi is, and he can't stay out of jail, and Ed is the cop that keeps booking him, and they fall in love, and then they fall madly in love, I should say, and decide they want a baby, but then find out that Ed, who is the woman, is and identifies as such in this film for the Gen Zers out there. She is barren, and so, but she's so desperate for a baby, and Ed High is such a good criminal that they decide they're going to steal one of a set of quintuplets that are birthed by a very someone that should not be having quintuplets. Let's just be real. Age-wise, and also they have a lot of money, and they're furniture people. They're basically the Mattress Mack of Arizona, and they steal the baby, and then
time.
Fucking... That's it. That's it.
That's where it
and then you got to be like... And then that's where you leave it on the word fucking and fucking. Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
And I'm getting that movie. I might just steal it from the Blockbuster.
My favorite part of that was I thought you were introducing yourself when you started reading. You turned the back of the... Hi!
And Ed.
And Ed.
This is already confusing.
Yeah, you got.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Right.
In fact, we did.
You can't give the whole story, you know.
No, you can't give
you
the whole story.
Give the,
you can.
What I'm finding with my synopsis is that mostly because I only have 1 minute, I set it. I get most of the setup in there.
Yeah,
and then leave the rest.
And you put in a lot of like,
and then, yeah,
very regional uh-huh. references.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, in Fargo.
Yeah,
to shout out another film that the Coen brothers made.
Yeah,
they pick up the box and they read about Mattress Mack, which means as much as Nathan, Arizona, to them, even less.
I like that. It's like, yeah, it is a national. It's like in stores nationally, and it says he's basically the Mattress Mack of Arizona, because you know what that means.
I will say that you didn't fall back on the hijinks ensue, and this is one of the movies where
hijinks ensue.
No, I was literally when I was gonna say after the word fucking was hijinks ensue, and then I ran out of time. But I like that's always a nice button for me, because it's like then it's like go watch it. I'm not going to tell you what happens, you know, that kind of thing. It's either hijinks ensue or hilarity ensues, depending on the genre. You know.
Hijinks ensue sounds like a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
Also racist, but...
It is.
Is it?
It is. But I see what you're saying, and it also does. It also kind of sounds like a cool band name, actually.
Yeah,
I'm always like picking out band names.
I've started picking out improv team names and podcasts.
Yeah, dude. Actually, that'd be kind of a neat improv team name. You know, maybe. Well, I don't know. Maybe not. Oh, speaking of that, do you want to, before we get into it, plug anything for Houstonians, for local Houstonians, that maybe they can come see any shows by any chance?
Yeah, come check out Baby Knuckle or Buckshot at Station Theater. And if you're into Japanese ramen, come to Jinya Ramen Bar.
Oh,
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. And one of many locations now, right?
Yeah.
All around the Houston area.
The greater Houston area.
Greater Houston area.
You have some out here now?
The closest is Sugar Land.
Okay. I'm in Sugar Land a lot.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, excellent. All right, well, Chase, what do you want to do, dude?
All right, so.
Wait, what is next?
We got notes.
Yeah, notes.
Let's jump right into it. Notes.
Okay, Keith, you want to do some honors as the guest?
Yeah. This movie, I got through the first, I guess, 15 minutes. And I thought this is one of the things about this movie is that it gives you the who, the where, the why,
oh, yeah.
what,
Yeah.
And the how, like a newspaper lead, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And then it's the movie, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting. So, like, right off the bat, my name is H.I. McDonough.
Right.
You know, people call me Hi.
Yeah.
Call me Hi. It's like he says.
Yeah.
And then you get his, you know, story hit there. It's in Arizona.
Right? Yeah.
Just by the imagery. And then he's a repeat offender. He's a criminal. And these patterns start popping up, right? That, these recognizable patterns.
Yeah.
These rule of threes. So I was like, my improv brain was like, really flickering when during the first chunk of this movie. So yeah, that was my first when I rewatching of this was like, oh shit, these guys knew what they were doing. And for 1987,
yeah,
again, and if you look at the list of movies that came out this year, it's bonkers. Like,
how we're gonna get into it when we get into the box office, just the top 10 of that weekend.
Yeah,
because I have not looked at that, and I'm actually interested
you'll recognize some.
But this that was like one of the first. That's actually something that I couldn't stop thinking about watching this movie was, I can't believe how like modern this movie feels. Like this must have really fucking tripped people out.
Yeah,
and like, when it came out,
it feels modern, but like in a way that I think only like our age would say modern.
Yeah,
because,
sure.
Like it's not like anything that comes out now.
Yeah, right. You know? Like,
it's very.
Yeah, it's not a Marvel movie.
No. But it's cinema, like it's a film, like it's got a 3-act structure.
Uh-huh.
Like to talk about improv, like there's the ABC kind of plots that go back to each other. There's escalation in it.
Well,
like, and it's just a solid script.
This was also at the time where we were at the height of our like cheesy schlocky. Like Spielberg was still top of his game, and you got your soaring scores, you know, and you got your you know. Your shots of golden fields, and it's, you know, and there's like, and John Williams comes in with horns, and it feels very like early 90s, like like Tom Hanksy type, you know, feel goody type movies. Yeah. And then you got this fucking movie in the smack dab in the middle of that era of just like grandiosity. And it's just like, this is what's up. This is what's going on. We're not going to show you the title card until, you know, like we explain the entire fucking story to you. And it's going to be awesome when we do it, because it's just going to come in and make it out of the fucking scene itself.
Yeah.
That was so cool, dude. And then the fucking acting in it. Oh, my God.
I mean, it's a movie that is like for people who just like love like movies, you know, like it's not a genre flick, which I'm not like shitting on genre flicks. But like, you know, when you're looking at a horror film, you're like, oh, this is good for a horror film. Or it's, you know, a better movie or whatever, but it's still, you know, you're leaning into the genre. This isn't a comedy in the sense of like, you know.
Oh, but it is so funny.
But it's so funny, right? Yeah. It's not a heist movie, even though there's like that heisty stuff in it.
Right.
Right. It's just like a solid story. It's a story movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so well done. The Barry Sonnenfeld actually shot this film. Who went on to direct a bunch of stuff, including Men in Black and everything. But the cinematography on this movie is so good. The color and the camera movement is like on point. And like the Coen brothers, this is their second movie.
Yeah.
'Cause Blood Simple was their first one. And
I would compare this to Fargo, and then they did Big Lebowski right after.
Yeah, yeah.
So they do this really structured, disciplined, like thriller tension movie.
Yeah.
Not that Fargo was exactly like that, but Blood Simple was very much like that. And then they kind of like say, fuck it, let's have fun and make a fun movie.
Yeah.
But also be very disciplined about everything we do in it and create this beautiful, you know, masterpiece, I think.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they were trying to like... They were really trying to break in to the business. And like, cause like, okay, so the Coen brothers and Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell, Holly Hunter, Frances McDormand, and Kathy Bates were all roommates.
What?
Yeah. Where?
This is
salad.
Yeah,
days.
They were all roommates.
Right. Yeah.
And they were so like which is like crazy because like nobody's worked with Kathy. They've all worked together and they're like, what did Kathy do?
But, like, interesting.
But you know, she was
Hollywood tea, baby.
When was Misery. Was that was like right around the
same
time.
That was
right
around the same
time. 87 or something. Yeah. But anyway, you know, so like they were all roommates. They all like worked together. And Sam, who is a visionary in his own right.
Sam Raimi.
Like they worked together because they helped produce Crime Wave. I think they wrote Crime Wave. Wow. The Coen brothers helped write Crime Wave too.
Never heard of it.
It's Sam Raimi's movie after Evil Dead.
Okay.
Because like, so what Sam did was he was like, oh, him and Bruce, like before they were roommates with everybody, they did the first Evil Dead. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they were like, we can get the funding for this genre film, like a horror movie. We can get into the like drive-ins and it'll make some money. Right. So mm-hmm. then they tried to do the same thing with a crime film. And it's harder to do that because there's not a built-in audience. Uh-huh. And then also Crime Wave is, it's a fun watch, like as an experiment, but like it's terrible. It's practically unwatchable.
Okay.
But okay.
Yeah. Sophomore slump.
And so like, but he wanted to do the same thing that the Coen brothers were doing because they were like back and forth. The Coen brothers are incredible writers, and Sam is not on the same level as that in-depth story structure kind of stuff, you know. But like, so they did the Blood Symbol, and then they were going to try and do, you know, that's what Sam was trying to do with Crime Wave. And then Sam went back to Evil Dead 2, and we all know how that turned out fantastically. And, you know, now he's a big guy, but so are they, right? So like they were all working together, and they're playing off of each other in this weird, like five person, like that is a weird.
Yeah. It reminds me of like some early improv teams where everyone goes off to become huge celebrities.
Oh, right.
Chunk of a team. It's like, who brought them together? The universe brought them together. And then they
Holly Hunter was supposed to be the girl in Evil Dead 2, the redneck.
Oh, wow.
That's why when you watch it, you're like, why? Like, she's very, like, you're like, oh, this definitely is Holly Hunter. It's just played by this girl who's more traditionally, like, attractive. It's not because they're not playing it for a joke as much as they could, and it was because the producers were like, no, you need to have somebody hotter in there,
more of like a starlet type or whatever. But man, she's cute as a button in this movie.
She's adorable. Oh my God. And I think one of my favorite shots,
she's so good.
So I mean, if you look at my reels and my TikTok, it's like you know, half of it is like Marvel theories and Seinfeld jokes, and then the other half is just baby videos. This movie is all baby reactions.
Like, the shots of those babies
are great. But there's one shot where it's right after they bring the baby home. I think it's when Goodman and Forsythe come, like they show up, and Holly Hunter's holding that 3-month-old baby or whatever, and it is literally half her size.
She
is so small.
She's
diminutive. I would say she becomes a star in this movie.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
this is like her, like the opportunity and preparation comes together. And Holly Hunter becomes Holly Hunter.
From
this point forward.
I would say that. I remember when you and me were talking about doing this movie, I think I was asking you, or you were like, oh yeah, Holly Hunter. And I was like, yeah, I don't know who that is. I can't remember who that is. And then I started watching this movie and I was like, oh my God, I know where I recognize this chick from. And I still hadn't even put together, I forgot her name was Holly Hunter even. I was like, I know where I recognize this chick from. And she was in Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor.
And which is sadly canceled.
God, that show is so funny.
I know. But and then she's
so funny.
She's fucking great in that.
She's so good at it.
Like she's such a good character actor, man. And like in the middle of this Tina Fey goofy comedy, she's like nailing this well-developed character and like
she
fucking
has
crushing it.
She has such control over the screen for being like, you know, she's small, like we've talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's quiet. Yeah. And she's like, she doesn't, it's such an efficiency. Mm-hmm. Of how she uses her voice and her words, where it's like everything makes a point. Like she doesn't have to go over the top in any way to get everything across.
Yeah.
Right. And like her, like just being like so deadpan, but you laugh at it, you know, and like, and you feel it. Or when they just get the baby and she's like, did you, when he gets in, she's like calm and talking about it. And then she just starts wailing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what's wrong? And she's like, I just love him so much.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I feel it.
Oh my
and
God. Can I tell you what my favorite thing she did in the entire movie? And it was such a small little thing, but it was like the cutest fucking thing ever. And like such a nice touch. It was at the very end when they give the baby back and everything. And he's like, well, what are y'all doing or whatever? And she was just like, you know, you mind if we just stay here for a minute so I can just look at him some more?
Yeah.
And just like, and she like, throws, just like, she just tosses her hand out like that. And she's just like, with this like pouty. And it's like, oh my God, what a fucking touch.
Yeah.
Or like those little subtle things, man.
It's just like the back of them looking at the baby when like they she puts her hand up or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, it occurs to the Arizona guy. Uh-huh. He's like, oh, y'all fucking stole it.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's what this is.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, God, this movie's so good.
It's so good. And she is a scene stealer, dude, without 100%. Even trying.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the Fargo podcast, you mentioned the Frances McDormand, you know, like all the choices she makes are so good.
Yes.
And they keep them in. And I feel like this was Holly's.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure. And with Frances McDormand
in this film,
having scenes with this movie.
Yeah. She's so good in this, like for that smaller part. Because, like, when you think of Frances McDormand, you think of, you know, Fargo and some of those other movies where she's like the lead and she's this, you know, she has a thing going on. But this is the most, or like the least Frances McDormand character of all of them, where she's very, you know, transformative in this. Like, she embodies that woman so well.
Yeah.
And she's so funny, but it's not like a funny part. You know what I mean? Like, there's no jokes in that performance.
Although I will say, I feel like their characters, McDormand and her husband, who was that actor? What was his name again?
That is Chandler's boss on Friends.
Yes. That's right. But he's been in a bunch of other shit that I recognize him in. He was so good in this movie. He was funny as hell in this movie, but for sure, 100% had to have been inspired by Cousin Eddie from Vacation. Were y'all getting that, man?
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Sure. Yeah,
that I got that right away. It was like, this is Cousin Eddie, like with
he
all the kids, and he's like,
delivery.
Yeah, he's just like, he's like, yeah, whatever, man, you know. And then he's like, what exactly are you talking about? He's like, I'm talking about sex, boy. What are you talking about? So
funny. And Holly Hunter plays a lady cop, lady police officer.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So, right, oh,
there's a lot of these parallels and these nods to future works.
Too. Yeah, right. Borrowing from yourself, kind of thing.
And when he's in the machine shop, his like logo for the machine shop that he's working at is a Hunsucker.
Ah,
so
that goes to
the Hunsucker.
Wait, was that from?
The Hunsucker Proxy is a movie that they make later on.
Oh. I see.
Right. And you also, this is their second movie.
I don't
movie.
Know what that word means.
Come on, Bryce.
Yeah.
We see the stable of actors that they start to choose.
Yeah. Oh, John Goodman.
Goodman. Yeah. Which, I was surprised to see him in this. I didn't know he was in this.
Yeah.
I didn't see his name on the title card, Chase, or whatever.
And he is so good as well.
John Goodman's in this. Oh, okay.
Good man. Come on, is Chaz. Good man.
Yeah. So oh my good. God, that whole, that scene enemy. Where he busts out and then,
and
you know,
reaches in
and the entire time just yelling at the top of his lungs the whole fucking time is so funny.
When they fucking forget the baby on top of the car and then they forget the baby on top of the car again.
Yeah. And he hits that no man left behind.
So one of my favorite parts about this is it's like, it's making fun of these characters in like the sweetest way too. Like, you know, High is a garbage person.
Right.
But he like sort of means
well. But gosh dang it, if you don't love him.
Like,
you
he's
know?
Not like, he's not like a bad person. Everything he does is bad because he doesn't know what else to do.
Right.
And he doesn't even necessarily know that it's bad. It's
right.
Like, well, it is bad, but like that's what I do because that's how. Like yeah, whatever. But just
it's all he knows how to be.
Yeah, and then but when even like John Goodman and William Forsythe, Galen Annabelle, like even they are like they're the bad kind of bad guys compared to High, right?
Yeah.
But
even they're
like concerned for the safety of the child and stuff to the point where they're like. They're going into the bank and they're like, all right, we're gonna go in there, we're gonna rob the bank. And they're like, well, what if we get shot? and like the baby.
Yeah, right. He can't be alone.
He can't be alone that long. So to save the baby, they bring a baby in with him.
It's so cool because from the customer's perspective, it looks like they're bringing a baby in to keep from getting shot. Like it looks like they're using it, but they're actually just concerned about leaving him alone. It's so good.
We're using code names.
Well,
you're afraid they're going to know your code name?
Yeah.
Code name. We're using code names. Freeze and get on the floor. That whole.
Yeah.
That, like, it's a very Abbott and Costello situation.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And you're right that the justification for so much of this, of the actions in the whys, is very simple. It's like, we're taking this baby because they have more than they can handle.
Yeah,
that's yeah,
it. Yeah.
That's it. That's right. It's not right. Like, that's their
and we
motivation.
Want one.
Yeah, we want one. We can't have one. There's every, like, physically, we can't make one. We cannot adopt one because I'm a criminal.
Yeah,
and they have five. They're rich and they don't need all these babies.
Right.
Which, also, how is that woman having five?
Yeah, exactly.
Like the little.
Yeah. But they
older.
Did. But they did say at the end where he was like, "Just keep trying." You know, Lord knows it. You know, it ended up working out, and we got more than we could handle. I mean,
they
threw that in there.
Really,
that was
like
funny.
They're so sweet, kind of dumb too. Like,
yeah,
but like at the end where he talks about watching him grow up and how proud he is of him. It's like, first of all, not your baby.
Uh-huh.
It never was your baby, and that baby doesn't even remember you.
Yeah.
But you're proud of his achievements.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From this other person raising
him.
Oh
man, that whole ending scene was so.
Yeah, you
so
tear
good.
Up.
Yeah,
it's sweet.
It was good,
and I love that they make it a point to say, "I got the best one."
Yeah.
Like, from the box cover, the movie, the box cover, and then also, like I said, from the trailer, they show all the first four babies: Gary, Barry, Larry Harry, I think.
Nathan Jr. Yeah.
And then you look at Nathan, and then the connection between, oh, that's the face of the baby that I saw in the trailer. He is the cutest baby.
Yeah.
Of the four, I think they deliberately.
Oh, yeah. Chose, for yeah, right? Certain.
Well, there were 15 babies that played five babies.
Okay.
So, I don't know how many end up playing that particular one.
So,
well, there's only
three
one,
for each.
So you guys know, I said I was going to bring a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mentioned earlier before the
podcast. Did you bring
brought
us
a baby? Did you steal a baby, Keith?
Did you steal a
you
baby?
You said it was going to be a small Keith. Surprise. Oh, I said, a small size surprise. Okay.
Better than that. And by the way,
I'm going to be on the news.
Uh-oh.
I related this movie a lot because I have a baby who's going to be one at the end of this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I related a lot to the, you know, which is something I had no connection to.
Sure, yeah.
So the whole part about, you know, being new parents and stuff, I got it. So I'm calling someone right now who is credited in this movie as Nathan Jr., Ed Jr., or High Jr.
Are you serious?
If he gets on, if he answers, I scheduled this yesterday.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello, TJ. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. We're podcasting right now. This is Chase and Bryce. Say hi, guys.
What's up, TJ?
Hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
I think this is my first podcast.
What? Wow. Holy cow. Okay.
This is, guys, this is TJ Kuhn. Am I saying that right?
Yep, Kuhn.
TJ Kuhn. He lives in Arizona. He's the credited as the baby in Raising Arizona. I believe you do. I just emailed you yesterday. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
holy
and I said,
shit!
If you're able to jump in and say hi on this podcast, it would mean a lot to my friends here and to me. So thank you so much for doing this. I'm going to open it up to a couple questions. And
I'm looking at the IMDb right now of TJ Kuhn, and it is the picture of you, TJ, as a baby in the middle of the street from this film.
Yep.
Wow. Holy cow.
Forgive me too, because I'm like always like, I get so nervous doing these things, and I'm like, no, another person wants to talk about the movie. And I'm like, just spit all, I'm like breathing into a paper bag before you guys call.
Oh, no.
Well, that's me. I was like trying to time this and get this like, so.
Wow.
This is fun. So obviously the first question I'm not going to ask you is if you remember anything from the movie, because you were such a young tot, but, One of the questions I want to ask right off the bat, though, is have you spoken, do you talk to Nick Cage or Holly Hunter or the Coen brothers since the movie?
I've only talked to Nicolas Cage, and I have to preface this by saying I never bring this up, and it's always like friends and family, like if we're out at a restaurant, they'll say, have you seen Raising Arizona? And it's usually like a 19-year-old server who has no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so one of my friends a few years ago with Nicolas Cage, I think he was promoting National Treasure or one of the movies, like something like that. And he was doing an interview in Phoenix, and one of my friends called the radio station and told them I was the baby. So they had called me that morning that Nicolas Cage was doing the interview, and they put me through to talk to him. And so that was kind of cool.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then I did some kind of event in Tempe where they were screening the movie at a theater, and they had the guy who was one of the actors who was in the prison that was mopping the floors.
Oh yeah.
He was there. So I got to meet him. He was a really nice guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you do now?
I'm in real estate in Phoenix. We do, it's like a small team of us that does residential sales in like the urban areas, like downtown Phoenix and Scottsdale. And so I've been licensed since like 2003, like right out of high school.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, because I was just saying, like, we're close to the same age, because I was like 3 months old when the movie came out. So like I was like your age when you were filming it when it came out.
Yeah, no, it's true. I never, if you would have told me like even 10 years ago when I started getting interview requests for this movie, like I would never guess I would like had to have been flown out to like New York for the Today Show and
wow.
So when you got the part, like how did you get that part? Like was it like a casting call that your parents just like, I mean, obviously you weren't looking through the trades or anything, but like, how did that come about?
He hustled.
There was an ad in the paper here, and they were looking for babies for a movie that was being filmed in Arizona. And so my parents took me down to Tucson. And I guess the story goes, they would do like temperament tests. And I think it was like over 600 or 800 babies that they were doing screen tests for.
Wow.
And they would pass you around. And if you were just kind of chill enough and didn't make a fuss, and you couldn't be crawling either. And so at the end, they finally had called my parents and said, you guys got the part and we want to have them come down for filming. I think the filming is only maybe a few weeks for my part of it. Mm-hmm. And then they had done some testing too with the motorcycle to see how I would react around that, like being put on it.
Whoa.
And I was just kind of like this, just kind of calm and collected enough so that they decided to just have me. But there was several backup babies, and I think even like a set of twin girls that they had to sub in a few times if babies started walking or they were fussy on the day of filming.
Yeah, I read that there was 15 babies that played the five of like you and the other four siblings, and like there was one baby or one set of babies that started to walk, so the parents put shoes on them that were on the wrong feet so they wouldn't walk.
They wouldn't walk.
Yeah.
I heard that too.
let me ask you, did you like the movie? I know you've watched it probably 1,000 times, but did you like it?
I do, and I always notice something different every time I watch it. And I think just the coolest thing is to see how young all of those, you know, John Goodman, Frances McDormand, was, and to see like how huge they are now. And I'm guessing why that's kind of like this movie still keeps coming up, because all the actors in that are like huge.
So then you don't get some actors don't like to watch movies they've done because they get you don't get embarrassed by your performance or anything, right? I'm guessing.
No, I think I did a stellar job.
He nailed it.
No, yeah. No, you did, of course. Yeah,
I think I did a stellar job.
Yeah, you did.
Well, I got to say, even before we knew that you were coming on the podcast, because Keith surprised us, we were just talking about how Nathan Jr. is the cutest baby out of the five.
Yeah.
So you nailed it.
I have to agree. And still the same personality, super easygoing and chill.
Yeah.
Do you have kids?
No.
Well,
I have nieces and nephews.
Yeah. Don't tell us how you're going to get those kids, because we are recording.
Yeah. Right.
We know your history. You know, nature versus nurture. You're gonna have to go steal some kids.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys knew this either. You probably do if you guys are like huge movie buffs. But the lady who Lynn Kitai, who played the mom that I was stolen from,
mm-hmm.
I didn't even know this until like a few years ago, but she's like a world-renowned ufologist and was like the person who filmed the UFO over Phoenix.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Whoa.
And so she has like a couple movies and books out about that and travels the world talking about UFOs. And I've met her a few times. She's like the nicest lady.
That's awesome.
Wow. That's so cool.
Good stuff.
I did not know that.
Well, anything else you want to say about raising Arizona? And did you have you won any drinks at bar? Or gotten drinks at bars because of this at all? Or have you ever?
Oh yes, I had to sign a few menus. Like thanks for all the hangovers at some of the restaurants we go to all the time here. And there's, I'm not sure where this is at in production, but a few years ago there was a director or producer from California that had started making a follow-up to the movie. And so he had come out and interviewed me and my parents, and I guess he had interviewed all the babies from the movie. And there's a whole nother backstory too after filming that actually occurred in real life and around Phoenix that, you know, when it does come out, it should be really interesting and kind of give like a better insight as to like the movie and everything that happened afterwards.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Okay. I looked for that.
Very cool.
Yeah, do you know when we can look forward to that coming out or by any chance?
I don't. It's on IMDb, though. I somehow got added to my page on there. It's called Arizona Raised.
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. See it right here.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a really nice guy.
Whatever happened to the babies cast in the Coen cult classic Raising Arizona?
It's not Harry, out. Gary, Larry, Barry, and Nathan,
Nathan Jr. Jr. Yeah.
Yeah, and Cody Ranger. I think he played Barry or Gary. He's still one of my really good friends. Our parents stayed friends.
Oh, cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So we see each other quite a bit.
Can I ask just real quick, and I know we'll probably let you go pretty soon here, but do you ever, when you like watch the movie, do you like have those moments of like pinching yourself like, holy crap, that's me with Nicolas Cage, that's me with Holly Hunt. Like, do you pinch yourself sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, every time.
Yeah.
People that are watching it have never been knew that I was in it or like, wait, that's you?
Yeah, right, yeah.
And it gets even more real because it wasn't like all filmed in like a soundstage or a set. So when you drive around Phoenix, you can still go to like most of the locations.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. That.
So to go to see them in person is really cool too.
Yeah.
Well, and that's like, you know, I mean, I, you know, back like probably 10 or 15 years ago when I was still living at home, my brother and I like digitized all of our home videos, but I don't have a home video of me as a baby that millions of people own. Like I actually, in fact, I watched the Blu-ray of this film last night. So I own your baby videos. How does that feel? I own your childhood. What is that like?
I do too on VHS.
That's so funny. Yeah, some of the old VHS ones have my name on the back, but I don't know if the DVDs do. But I have, my dad's like saved boxes and boxes of old VHS tapes. So yeah, it's kind of cool to see my name on the back.
So wow. Do you, I don't know how the royalties work or anything, but have you, do you still get royalties?
You get residuals
from being a baby and raising Arizona? Because it's got to have some play still.
You would think, but I guess back then it wasn't like California where you could, you know, cast babies and you have to have all these protections. It was
here.
So no, I have copies of some of the checks, and it was like one of them was for like $90, one was like $120. My parents were in their early 20s, so they had to take time off work to do this, and no residuals or anything, just the opportunity to.
That's so cool. That's, though.
Yeah, still worth it.
Yeah. Well, TJ, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
This. Yeah,
thank you, TJ.
No, of course. Yeah, thank you guys for the call. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, take care. Thanks again.
You guys have a good rest of the day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Man, holy crap, what Keith. Hell? What the hell, man?
That was awesome.
He's like, oh, no, it's like before we start recording, he's like, ah, it's nothing big, though, really. We'll just, you know, it's really, I don't want to get you too hyped on it or anything. He's like, it's just the guy that played Nathan Jr., that's all.
Well, he pulls out his phone and he starts talking about how he has a baby. I was like, oh, he's going to put his fucking baby on the goddamn phone. This is going to be great radio. Fantastic. We're going to hear a baby fussing over the phone. Your wife's just holding it like, say something. They're not talking now. You're like, God, this is gonna be so dumb, and we're gonna have to sit here and like act like it's funny, like it's a bit,
all because it's an Asian baby guy.
Yeah, well, Chase, you're used to doing that with me every week anyway, acting like it's funny. So, you know, you shouldn't have been too mad about that.
Yeah, well, so I started doing a deep dive. I did a deep dive on the baby, and I found out he only never got into Hollywood. Yeah. Or he maybe did a couple commercials.
Which, yeah. like, by the way, TJ Kuhn, such a cool name. How did that, yeah. like, if he wanted to.
It'd be a good Hollywood
name. I'm going to look up his realty.
And yeah. the other character who has a badass name is Randall Tex Cobb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The bounty hunter guy.
Yeah.
yeah.
Who plays a pivotal role in this movie.
Yes.
And I remember watching this, too, and being very confused about this character who
right.
starts off as like all my college, you know, English lit was like symbolism, right? Is this real?
Yeah, or right,
is
this, right, like, right.
A representation of a woman scorned or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, it's equated to.
There yeah.
Oh, there's TJ. Yeah. Because,
oh wow.
That was the face.
Yep.
The,
that's
the
him.
Voice.
That's Nathan Jr.
Just still the best. Liked yeah. The baby.
Still the best baby.
Wow. Cool. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, TJ Cobb. I mean, Tex Cobb, and then he starts to talk. And he gets interviewed right, in the yeah. movie, and it's such a. I'll say a little bit more about him in a minute, but
okay,
that threw me off too. It's like, wait a minute, he's real?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, yeah, yeah, for sure.
No one's really afraid of him,
like, right?
He murders whatever is in his path.
Yeah,
I mean, mostly rabbits, but
yeah, because when yeah, right. he's introduced in
that we
dream,
see,
he throws the grenade to blow up the rabbit, and when he drives past the flower, and the flower just catches
exactly.
fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Man,
all this sort of
yeah, stuff. That I also had the same reaction.
But he was a boxer
as well. But that but I ended up liking how they did that.
Yeah, yeah,
because it was cool. such a smooth they transitioned it so well from being a surrealist thing into oh no, this is actually part of the reality of this. Like it's such a cool little mind fuck for the audience that I ended up just being like, I love how they did that. You know, especially just the way that like every time he's like, dude, at the end when he there's just a fucking explosion and then he appears. Yeah. Dude, that's like, what's the cool. And then they're just like, who is that guy? You know, like,
and this is back in, you know, the Coen brothers did not have money, right? So these are yeah. one shot explosions.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and they nailed it.
And there's so much, like, this is one of the things that when you watch film like this, when it's done well and it's done back then, and you just realize like everything is photographed.
Yeah.
Like everything is real. There's nothing here that is made up. Like it's all tricks, but everything is, all the tricks are real.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's a tangible thing.
It's all practical.
Thing. So like it's just so neat the way mm-hmm. that they do it.
Yeah. And I think that it also really works so well because the characters in the movie, everyone that is not the bounty hunter, are all on the same page as us, where none of them can tell if the dude's real or not either. Even in,
yeah.
even when they face him, they're just like mesmerized by this guy. And
like when
even Nathan Arizona yeah. is like, you know what? You're just a bad man. That's
yeah.
what I think.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah. and he's like, I'm
doesn't know what to
the
make
couch
of
right
him.
Now, and
yeah.
and he looks up and he's gone.
He's gone. Yeah,
he's smoking cigars.
Yeah, yeah. There. Oh man, oh, when shit. He catches that fly too.
Yeah,
that's right. So funny, dude. That was cool.
His, if you listen to his dialogue too, his, they kept the sound, his nose is so nasally.
Yes, yeah. he's nose, stuffed up.
Yeah, his nose is so wide from boxing.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
He was a former boxer.
Yeah, he went 15 rounds with Larry Holmes. That's like his
whoa.
World famous, like his most famous fight. He lost.
Yeah.
I watched the video of him on Letterman. He was like this super gregarious. They called uh-huh. him like the white Muhammad Ali because he uh-huh. was so talkative and he was all, you know, just
makes
very
sense
sharp.
That he did film after that. Yeah.
yeah right.
And he was super gracious in his defeat. Like he was uh-huh. very funny about it. He does a roast of Larry Holmes years later.
Yeah.
This is like in the maybe 81 or whatever.
But yeah.
He's
yeah,
really
sure.
young then. And it's so funny. And like he's, yeah. This is like Coen brothers are so good at finding these people. I mean, like, this is, I don't know if they write the roles for these people
sure.
or they just, this is it. This is
yeah.
the one. This
yeah.
The,
I mean,
they end up finding the guy.
Obviously, they wrote. You know, they write the roles for Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
yeah.
What's his name is married to her. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's Joel, right?
Yeah. Well, something real quick, though, on Tex Cobb. He was also in
Ace Ventura
yeah. Pet Detective. Yeah.
He worked steadily from
yeah.
80s to the 90s.
Yeah.
Every year he's got a movie.
I looked him up last night. His last thing was an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh,
he's not,
really?
He's not dead. He's not dead. He just stopped.
Yeah, he was like,
yeah, he just got older.
Because
yeah. like mostly he played, like he didn't even play the heavy in a lot of episodes of things. But he did. He was always like a henchman.
Yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
Or something. Because he's, I mean, look at him. He
yeah.
he looks like a scary.
Well, and
henchman.
Also the way they had him, like
he always played like Big Harry Khan.
Yeah,
that was his name.
The way they had him done up and everything made it seem like the, you know, people who did Mad Max like missed opportunity. Yeah. You know?
Well, that's what he's dressed as.
Yeah, yeah, totally, 100%.
Like, and you never get like the full story, but like what are the fucking baby shoes he has hanging off of his
thing? That was another question you're asking the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, you he did say, he was like, you know, I hunt people.
Yeah.
You know, people, babies, whatever. So maybe I just assumed it was from a previous hunt.
Something, some little
But maybe he lost a baby, I don't know.
Whatever.
Maybe he's got a sad backstory.
He's like, you're gonna give me the 50,000 or I'm gonna take the baby somewhere.
Yeah, right.
And basically he's like, I'm gonna sell this baby.
Right. Either to you or to someone.
A baby.
Right, right.
Like, he wasn't gonna return it for 25,000. He was gonna sell it for more.
I was also gonna say credit to TJ for not freaking out as a baby being around him, you know, on film, because I was scared looking at him just watching it now.
Well, and then just everything. So, you know, we talked about how like everybody is like sweet in their own way in this film, except for him.
Yeah.
Who, he's not like mean to the baby, but like, he does put a baby on the front of his motorcycle and it's just firing guns within a foot of the baby's ears. And TJ, to his credit, is just like, goo goo gaga, chilling, baby, bro. Fussing.
I guess you could say he was born to be wild. You know, because he fit
it. You set it up like it was going to be a pun.
Oh, no. I mean, it was a song reference.
Fucking Bryce. Yeah,
joke.
Come on, Chaz.
See,
because, you know, he's calm around the motorcycles. He's born to be wild, you know?
We don't even have to use our soundboard when he's around.
Yeah, right.
And the last thing I'll say about Tex Cobb is, and this is a nod to another movie you guys have done, The Professional.
Yeah.
Cobb's demise is grenade strapped to him, and then the reveal of Pi with the pin in his finger.
Oh shit! Right? Yeah,
same thing.
You're right.
Yeah.
So Shawshank robbed from this movie.
Everybody,
Professional robbed from this movie.
I would say Wes Anderson took
Wes Anderson's a lot. Style.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's very different. He's a very different style of director. You know, he's got his like very particular auteurship, but his storylines and some of his like more static shots definitely take from the same sort of like screenwriting style that the Coen brothers have.
Yeah.
You know, I could definitely see that, because he's a little bit younger than they are.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And I would say not to humble brag, I've been on a one or two movie sets in my lifetime, and they have something called last looks. So that's before they shoot a scene, last looks, and then you have to scan the shot to make sure that there's no, you know, water bottles or anything that's in there. I can't imagine the stress of a last look on a Wes Anderson or a Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Because every shot is so set up, composed,
orchestrated.
It's orchestrated. Yeah. There's nothing left to chance, and there's nothing left for misinterpretation, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it special.
But also, that's no humble brag. That's burying the lead, man. We could have asked you what sets you've been on and stuff, and what you know.
A couple indie movies. I have an IMDb credit, by the way.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm going to look it up.
Can we out it?
Please.
All right. Hell yeah.
It's a great little indie movie. It was called Breakup at a Wedding.
Okay.
Directed by the last name is Kanaj. I'm so sorry. Your brother's Phil.
You won't be getting cast in one of his movies again. Not after this.
What was it called?
Breakup at a Wedding. And I was also an extra in another kind of indie comedy film featuring the late Anne Heche.
So, oh, that's right. She did pass.
I'm in a shot. There's one shot where she's in the foreground and I'm outside of the building on the sidewalk standing, and you can see me.
Yeah. Wow. That's nice. That's awesome. But also, I mean, while Chase looks this up or whatever, you also did this is our interview Keith part of it, part of the show. But you also did, you know, you started improv with UCB NY, right up there, or in New York,
the,
right?
Yeah, the Pepsi of the New York comedy.
It's
called the Pit.
Gotcha.
Pit TV right here.
Yeah, I have a couple of little fun videos.
Pull it up there. Yeah, there we go.
What are your two credits?
Hell yeah.
Yeah,
let's see how far down you are.
Yeah.
Shit, I don't even think you made the call sheet here.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it.
Gooch got up there before you.
Ben Gooch.
Let God.
Yeah, we're, at the time we were cranking out. We're trying to keep up with UCB, I would say, in terms of video production and comedy shorts. College Humor was it out. It was like, I call it the golden age of
of
improv.
Yeah.
Improv and sketch comedy.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, you know, so improv and film have not ever really meshed that well.
No.
You know, like you had Whose Line back in the day. Yeah. But have you watched Murderville?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that, I think, is the best way of doing improv and film together. Like it's not, you know, it's this weird long form improv and like having just the one person who is completely out of the know.
I mean, can you, I mean, how much can you trust it really? And then editing, well, and, you know, I don't know. Is it the best way? I mean, it's better than short form on film, but
yeah.
I mean, did you watch the Middle Digit Schwartz stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
What'd you think?
I like it.
It's so good.
They're great improvisers.
Yeah, it's
but I thought that was a great way of showing how long form can be done on film.
But it's
film.
Also like everything that they do, you're like, this is exactly what you don't do. Call yourself out.
Well, they can only get away with it because it's them.
Yeah,
and they work together.
Exactly.
Yeah, those guys were doing, I think they did a Carnegie Hall show. They shot, the one that they shot, you got to wonder how many back, you know, footage they have of other shows that they're like, no.
Yeah, they said that the ones that ended up, those three that they ended up, they shot four, and one of them, they were like, yeah, let's not release that one.
Right. They can't all be bangers, even at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, just anytime you see one of my improv shows, you know it's going to be good. But if it's not good, it's your
fault.
The only one I've ever done that was bad is the one you were at.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Every other one has been so good.
That's how it works. But what's never not good is Buckshot and Baby Knuckle at perform regularly at Station Theater, Secret Group, anywhere they can find, and you can find them on Instagram to go find their shows. Find when they get on air. Chase is going to go pee. I definitely want to plug that and just reiterate to Houstonians listening out there, if you want to see some top quality improv in the Houston area, like the best you can find, in my opinion, those are two groups that you can't miss on. And a big part of that is because of this man in this chair here, Keith Wong. Straight up. I've already told you how much I'm a fan of yours, but I just got to let the people know, okay?
Are you sure we're not on break right now?
No, I'm recording, baby. I got control.
You guys used to take break. You would do we're going to stop for a commercial break.
We did used to do that. Right? And then we stopped. It was because we would make... Okay, so this is some BTS for listeners out there. We would make those up on the spot. And, you know, like take the break and be like, all right, what are we going to do? And then, you know, it just got to a point where it was like, sometimes it would take us 15 minutes to come up with something that wasn't even that we were just like good enough.
Right.
Fine. And then once it gets to that point, we're just kind of like, we don't need to do that anymore. You know, what's the point?
And I also noticed, because I went back and listened to Fargo, you guys spent like 20 minutes on Reboot Recast. Really debating it.
Oh yeah,
like, man, see, a lot of time on that.
Yeah, and that's always good when we do a movie where we can do that.
Yeah,
because it doesn't happen very often, you know.
You haven't done the I'm just gonna talk about the things you don't do anymore.
Oh yeah go. Yeah, hell yeah.
It was the now I'm gonna blank on this too. Watch it or watch shit, or what is it?
Oh, yeah.
It's shit or it's...
Worth it or worst shit.
Worth it or worst shit.
Right. I honestly forgot about that segment.
Yeah, it's like your version of thumbs up.
Right, right.
Down. That's it. It's just very binary.
You're right. Yeah, reminded me that we have like totally forgotten about worth it or worst shit.
Worth it or worst shit.
Oh, yeah. You know, it would help if we like listened to our own episodes.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. But we can start putting that back in there. I think what the trick was, we would do the rating first and then do it. And it was like, well, we just gave our rating. So we need to do worth it or worship first.
Well, also,
and then give a specific rating.
I think it also occurred to me that the rating and worth it or worship are kind of like, it's a hat on a hat.
Right, yeah. But I think that it can work if we do the work. It's because then it's like, we'll give you the general thing, and then we'll give you the breakdown.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, and it's also like you could hate a movie
and still give it a different... Right. Okay.
All right.
But anyway.
All right, have we talked this movie to death?
Well, we haven't really said anything about Nicolas Cage yet.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like this is a...
Oh, is this the one that he got nominated for?
No.
That was Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he won for that, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. So that's the next one we need
now, to do. Well, he got...
Well, next Cage movie we need to do.
Has he had more nominations? Oh, man, I'm so
excited. But he didn't get nominated at all for this?
I'm going to check.
Probably not.
I don't think for an Oscar.
Oh, sure. I will just say that, like, okay, fans of the show will know that, you know, I have...
Because he has two Oscar noms and one win. He was nominated and won for Leaving Las Vegas, and then he was nominated for Adaptation.
God,
he should have won for that. Yes. Who won that year? I think I look it up every time. I think it was Daniel Day Lewis. No,
Russell Crowe.
It was fucking Adrian Brody for The Pianist.
Oh, right.
Which, like,
yeah.
He sexually assaults Halle Berry on stage.
Yeah. And puts on Rasta wigs and does Rasta accents on SNL, introducing bands for no reason.
Yeah, and he played a special needs guy in The Village and went like, full.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tropic Thunder
style. Which, by the way, The Village actually kind of slaps. I hate to say it.
What's The Village?
That's a M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that. Joaquin Phoenix, right?
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix. There's
oh, and it ended up, like, the twist was that it was like a fucking, like, they didn't know that it was
ghost, is that Bruce Willis was a ghost the whole time.
Right, exactly.
What was it? Fuck, I always mess it up. Because it was from Always Sunny. He goes... Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The twist is that Bruce Willis was the
dead.
Ghost.
No, it was Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
No, the guy was Bruce Willis
the guy was Bruce Willis
the guy
whole time.
Was Bruce Willis the whole time.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I saw a funny tweet. It goes, M. Night Shyamalan. The M stands for movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Movies Night Shyamalan. Oh, man. But, okay, well.
I can't wait for that new one. By the way, I cannot wait for that new one.
What?
Knock at the door or knock at the cabin.
Old was so good.
You people are like,
I fucking loved Old. Did you listen to us talk about that?
Public is in an abusive relationship.
Yeah,
with M. Night Shyamalan.
I agree.
He keeps putting out these movies.
I agree.
Oh, dude, Old was not that good at all.
This is the one that you two could not be more divided.
Yeah,
on.
It was so. Old, it was the epitome of average.
I have almost the same relationship with that one as I do with, like, The Lobster. Like, M. Night has become like that guy where it's like, God, I want to hate it, but it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. Now he did do a lot of shit. Avatar, or was it called Avatar? The Last Airbender was garbage.
Oh, right.
And After Earth was absolute garbage. You know, he just got ahead of himself. But ever since he's been putting his own money up, because he does it. I mean, yeah, he's a little bit of a blowhard in the same way, but, like, I kind of like it. But he was like, you know, I had to get my own skin in the game again, or I had to be afraid that the movie's going to fail or it wouldn't be good. Because Split was good. Glass, I really loved. It's it's very much not what everybody wanted that movie to be, which makes me so happy about it.
Okay,
like halfway through the movie, it totally changed.
Well, maybe we can do it. Maybe we can do those because I haven't seen that shit. Maybe you can convince me that he can still make good movies.
Well,
but I'm not convinced.
If you didn't like Old, because you said Old was like a made-for-TV movie or something, which I wish this would. Was on TV all the time.
It was fine. I just didn't think it was that good. And then the twist was annoying.
The direction of that film was so good because everything had a purpose and everything was done just like this. Like every time the camera moves, it's on purpose and it points to something in the film.
Right.
You know?
I want to take a quick moment to change gears, and
yes,
because I've been wanting to pull this one out too. You had a very interesting. I want to quote both.
Watch
of you.
Him just like okay. Call Nicolas Cage right now. Just like bury the lead. He's like, we're gonna call the baby.
He's like, I met him on set on one of my films.
He opens the door and Nick Cage is in my closet. What the fuck?
Nick Cage, I've been living here for 10 years.
Yeah.
I've also found the Book of Secrets.
You just mentioned the president
about M. Night Shyamalan movies and The Lobster. You described The Lobster as like, I don't like this movie, but do you remember saying something to that effect?
Yeah.
It's like, what was it?
It was like, I hate this movie so much that I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love that I hate this movie so much. I don't know, whatever it was.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it was one of those genius things I said, exactly. I'm sure.
Right.
I should have written it down, I'm sorry. But I wrote this down, something that you said once. Okay. This explains, again, this is how I describe the dynamic that you guys have here. Uh-huh. What has always drawn me in as a listener.
Okay.
Here's Bryce's quotes. I could sleep a family of four in my pants because there's a tent there. They would have to be very small people. Four ants, maybe. I got ants in my pants. Anyway, so let's go.
That's one of my favorite things about Bryce that I also hate. So, like The Lobster, is that like Bryce will say some joke that I want to just die on the vine. Like I try to ice him. And when you try to ice Bryce, he doesn't stop. He just keeps talking and keeps going and keeps building the joke, like not in an awkward way. It's as though he's like crushing it. Yeah, like you can hear it in his head.
Yeah.
He's just hearing like uproarious laughter from a crowd of people as he goes. And he's like, all right, I'll stop. I'll stop because I don't want to hurt your spleen from laughing so hard. Right.
Yeah, and in reference to Coen Brothers, the previous bit for Fargo was calling the movie Near Stop.
Do you remember that? Oh yeah, that's right.
His poor reference, you know, Near Stop.
Oh, that's right. I
forgot. It's gold. It's pure gold, people.
Oh man.
Is this some kind of joke?
Oh man. That's good. Wait, what movie did I say that ants in the pants shit about?
I don't know.
Was that during The Lobster? Idea. That's so I really said that?
Yeah.
I don't even remember it. When you said it, I was like, that does sound
he was looking at me like
that.
Wait. We get on very well.
Yeah. Got some Ringo drops.
And there was a oh
that was good. That's good stuff, Keith.
I will say the funniest thing that Bryce has ever said was the names Roth. Ira Roth. We were doing James Bond jokes.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you just go, oh, your name's Roth. Ira Roth.
Good shit.
That's right. Yeah. All right.
Big dong boinks.
You guys want to do some segments?
Yeah, let's do some segments. Oh yeah, and I just want to say,
are we still recording?
I did just want to say, we did record. We left some surprises for you in there, Chase, so you'll have to listen. But no, I did just want to say to button this about Nick Cage. Loyal gappers out there will know that I wax poetic about Nick Cage any chance I get. I fucking love this guy. He's probably my favorite actor of all time now that I've started doing this podcast.
Oh, and we will definitely be covering Renfield. For sure.
But I just want to say for all those people out there that still don't believe me about how great he is, go watch this fucking movie.
He's phenomenal.
You see that like he knows what he's doing at all times, even when he's being what you think is the worst actor of all time.
So yeah,
he's doing that shit on purpose.
The Coen brothers and him, or he and the Coen brothers, like had a tumultuous.
Yeah,
that's I would not think how so. You say that word. Tumultuary.
I don't know what that word means.
Speaking of, but they had a rough time
tumultuous.
Working with each other, but in like the best way possible. Like they both, like he talks positive about them. They talk positive about him in the way of like, he's like, you know, they wouldn't let me go so far. Like they're very like auteurship. And I had to like rein myself, or they had to rein me in when I wanted to do things. And then they would say the same thing of like, he wanted to do some fucking nutty ass shit. Yeah. And we're like, this movie can't do that. You have to like rein it in. But then they were like, they would rather work with someone like Nicolas Cage every day than work with somebody who like can't find it.
He brings
nothing to the table.
Yeah.
Like, he brings something. And that's what I've always said, and you've said about Nicolas Cage, is that every single take that Nicolas Cage is in, he is 110% acting. Yeah. He is bringing it.
Yeah.
He is making choices. He is in the character.
Making choices.
It's just sometimes bananery.
Yeah.
But like, he's committed to it, and it's consistent.
Right.
Like,
right.
He doesn't, it's not like he just, like, one day he'll come with this guy and another day he'll come with another character. He is 100% in that character. His character may just not be real.
Right. You know,
might not translate to something. Right. But he's always great. Even in his, like, fucking, Red Box movies, the movies that don't exist, the tax shelter Hungarian filmed things.
Yeah, right.
But, like, he's still crushing it.
That you're going to be entertained by him at least, at the very least.
If you hire Nicolas Cage, you are getting your money's worth.
Yeah, for sure.
He is going to perform.
Sure. There's a parallel universe where he's Superman. Because he was
super
like I've seen the little Polaroids and stuff of it, and he had like the long hair still because he was shooting Con Air at the time.
That's right. Speaking of Austin Butler and Elvis, he's got his healthy Elvis obsession. He's probably at Lisa Marie's funeral, I bet.
Oh yeah, probably.
Didn't he date Lisa Marie?
I don't know. Did
for
he
for a minute?
Could be. Let's put it out there.
Yeah, sure. He did.
Of course, I look at the Asian to find that out.
There you go again, Chase. There you go again.
Oh, man.
Dick!
Yeah, no, you can't say enough about Nicolas Cage. And like, it kind of goes...
That's not going to fly here.
Like, his hair in this movie is...
What's the matter with you?
So fun. It just... Because it starts out bad. And it gets progressively like bigger, and he keeps getting beat up in ways.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just he's fantastic. That fight scene between him and Cobb is probably one of the best fucking fight scenes in a movie.
And speaking
up until that, the Leon pin.
Yeah.
But speaking of like best shit, I also do have to say real quick that whole chase scene.
Yes.
When he's running from the cops and everything.
Yes.
That is probably my favorite chase scene I've ever seen in any movie.
Watching it, because I had not seen this
movie.
And
the dogs get involved. Dude.
Yeah, I had not seen this movie in a long time.
Yeah.
And when I watched it, I was like, oh my God, you know what fucking stole this exact scene? Barry.
One
episode of Barry like in real time when he's like fighting the karate guy.
Yeah, dude.
And like they keep going, like they go to the store.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like you're the whole thing, steal is a strong word, but you know what I mean? Like that's another one of those things that's like they definitely were like, let's do a whole episode of Barry based on this one
scene. It works though because we found out that Barry is canon to Raising Arizona. It was one of the quintuplets. He grew up to be Barry.
Barry, Arizona.
Yeah, there it is.
Barry is actually based on TJ Kuhn's life. That's
right.
That's why he was nervous about doing a podcast.
Right. He gets real stage fright. Yeah.
I mean, we all heard it. When I asked him what he did, and he goes,
real estate.
Real estate.
Yeah. Let's just call it real estate. Okay, TJ, we got you. We got you. Wink, wink, buddy.
Allegedly. I'm assuming he might actually listen to this, so I don't want to say that he is legitimately. A
hitman trying to be an actor. All right, well, let's get into some segments then.
All right. Let's get the rating first.
Worth it or worst shit?
Oh, do you have a drop?
No, I used to, but...
here we go. Is it... I have this. It's... it's...
Pig's good.
Yeah, I have that.
Or...
Pig's good.
Oh, yeah, you got the fuck it. All right.
Yeah.
All right, well then, Keith, you want to go give us a worth it or worst shit first?
Sure, worth it.
Okay.
Worth it.
Yeah, solid. Yeah. I mean, I'm the same way.
For me,
it's good.
Worth it.
All right.
We did it.
big surprise.
Yeah.
I wonder why we quit doing that.
Well, now we can give the rating then.
Yeah, let's put the hat on the hat.
You know why we kind of, we had to add time to talk about Larry?
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite segment.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So the rating. Go for it.
Keith, do you have anything? Do you want to go first?
Yes. I will. I'll give the rating.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm going to give it a. So, in reference to one of the things I wanted to bring this up, the whole movie is we said it's modern. It looks modern, right? I would say it looks timeless. Like you really can't.
That's better. Are
you
better?
You know, but there's a line that the dad says, where Nathan Senior, where he says, you know, the jammies had Yodas on them.
Yeah.
The first reference to anything outside of this world that really caught me.
You know, it struck me now too, because like in 87, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi was 84, right?
84, yeah.
Yeah, so like Star Wars was over, and by this point it was 3 years done, and it was like, oh, if you like that, you're a nerd and nobody cares about it anymore. Like, the toys were already kind of not selling.
It was at that time, yeah.
And so, but like, you know, it wasn't until the late 90s, early 2000s when they brought back everything, and then Yoda became a thing again. And now, another 10 years or 20 years later, it's Baby Yoda, Grogu. So like, you know, a parent would say Yoda's on it. So it is timeless because...
Yeah, it ends up, vicious cycle. But
so,
yeah.
So out of
also he was in a diaper. He wasn't wearing.
Well, that's
true. I never saw them with pajamas. That's true. I don't think.
There were no jammies.
That's true.
And I don't think they ever changed the diaper.
No.
Shut the diaper.
Yeah, even after the accident and everything.
Like, it's natural.
Yeah.
So out of 10 Yoda jammies, I'm gonna give this 9.5 because I want the Asian father to sit there and be like, "Why not 10?"
Wait, we can't.
Come on, brothers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. Yeah. All right, yeah.
No.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, man. Now I'm going back. I really wish that, like, the first question I had asked TJ was, do you still have Yoda jammies?
Oh.
That one.
All right, call him back, Keith.
Call him back.
You got his number.
Make it so.
All right, 9.5. Okay. The gappers are in for a treat today because out of 10 wife swaps, I give this movie 10 wife swaps, baby. It's a 10 out of 10 for me. I could find no faults with this movie. Wow. I fucking loved it. It is. A big time candidate for top five.
I enjoy
list.
Boning your wife.
There you go. Perfect.
What's the last 10 out of 10 that you gave?
That's actually a very good question, man.
Well, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is your number one of all time from the podcast.
From the podcast that we've covered. I don't think that was my last 10.
But Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was before.
I can't remember what my last 10 was. But it's been a minute. Because we did not do that many good movies last year.
That's because Bryce mostly can only pull twos. Guy stuff.
Yeah, two balls. Where's yours? Got him, right, guys? Okay.
For the listener at home, he's hanging
two balls.
He's kind of high-fiving.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well.
So I'm even more normal than, you know, normal people.
All right. Let's get into.
He was looking at me.
Oh, we get on very well.
Numbers.
All right.
Interesting. This is going to be interesting. Again, only because of the movies that came out in 87. It's between 85 and 87. It was just like the golden age of this type of certain kind of movies that came out.
Yeah. You know, adult, like parents go out and do something movies.
Yeah.
You know, like that doesn't exist anymore. There's no movies that are like, you kind of have like some little kid movies still, but for the most part it's just like everybody has to see this movie. It's like the Marvel movies. That's where you get your comedy. You have absolutely no romance in them because no Marvel characters are allowed to even think about sex because it's supposed to be for everybody. Remember like Superman when he like fucked Lois Lane? Like what happened to fucking in superhero movies? They need to bring the fucking back.
Hot take.
It got me so hard.
Come on, Jazz.
Come on,
Jazz. All right, you got me off track. Man, I need some more Ritalin. All right, it's a $6 million budget. The opening weekend, March 15th, 1987, which I think is actually the limited release.
Killed men for doing far less.
Whoops, that was supposed to be way shorter than that. Sorry. Go. What'd you say, Chase? You've bored me. I'm playing with my drops now.
So the release date is April 17th, but the opening weekend was March 15th.
Okay.
So April 17th was, I guess, the wide release.
Okay.
The limited release was on March. Wait, April? March, April, right? Guys,
is this some kind of joke? Is this some kind of joke?
All right. So with a $6 million estimated budget, what was the opening?
Is this some kind of joke?
What was the opening box office?
I feel like this was a very, if my memory serves, it was like an indie movie. Like, they weren't known. It wasn't a big studio release. I don't think there's a lot of backing behind it. Again, mm-hmm. I didn't really think about it or consider it until 8 years later. Mm. And I considered myself a pretty big movie buff at the time. So I'm going to go low. I'm going to say maybe $995,000.
Okay, I was kind of thinking the same thing, but I'm thinking a little bit higher. I'm going to go 1.5 mil.
All right. I was trying to find the thing.
Come on.
He chose poorly.
36,000.
Oh my god. $240.
Opening weekend. I'm trying to get
how did they ever get work again?
$87.
Yeah, I'm getting clarification on when.
So it had a weird release schedule, yeah, basically.
So March 15th, is that just like two screens? What are we going on here? Why does it keep saying that 10 weeks out?
I don't even remember knowing that you could, there was a theater that I could go find the movie at the time, because I was I was a teenager, so like my local Galveston was not carrying
it. Yeah,
right. Oh god, right. It was on one screen.
Oh,
so
wow.
It made $36,000 on one screen.
That's, it's got to be in Arizona. It had to have been in Tempe or wherever. Like, hey, yeah, right. Come see the town.
Yeah, yeah.
They have TJ cut the ribbon.
Exactly.
All right, so I'm going to pull up the, let's see here. Well, I'll look at it in a second. All right, so the one screen opening weekend was 36. What was the domestic gross? Because once it opened wide.
Yeah.
Okay, and it did get a wide release eventually?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in April.
How many
April
screens?
17th.
Do you know how many screens?
Let's see here. It had... So in the next weekend, it opened into 21 screens, 149. So its wide release was April 17th, and that was 696 screens. So okay. That was its fifth week overall. But that weekend, when it actually got its wide release, what do you think it made?
On that weekend, I would say I'll go 1.5 million. I'll go back to that.
All right.
Ooh.
Wait,
I don't want to say it, but he is sitting here doing math.
Let's just say he pulled out a calculator. Chase is trying so hard.
I set him up.
He did.
So you can. I set up the visual jokes on podcasts. So
yeah. Hell yeah.
Why is Keith quiet? He's literally doing math on a podcast. God damn it.
I'm gonna stick to my. I think it was a sleeper. A 995,000.
Okay. 2,209,000. So, but yeah. By the time it got a wide release that weekend, it doubled, almost doubled what it made. So it was at 5.4 after that. Okay. But what did it end at?
Yeah. Here's.
And this lasted, from what I can tell here, it lasted about 12 weeks on the charts. So what was what was its domestic gross
after 12 weeks?
I'm gonna say 10.6 million.
I'm gonna lowball and say 7.9.
Oh god, I thought that was absolutely dreadful.
22.8.
Okay. Oh, okay.
On a $6 million budget.
Wow. So that thing had a massive multiplier. Success.
Yeah. Massive success. And it ended up grossing 29 worldwide. So we're just going to skip that because y'all are dreadful.
Yeah.
It goes so low.
So the opening weekend, what was number one at the box office that opening weekend? So on March 13th, this is before, you know, March was a
well, do we, can we get some hints?
It's the first of a quadrilogy action comedy.
Oh, Beverly Hills Cop.
Nope, but we have covered it on the podcast.
Very good guess.
Oh, we have? Lethal Weapon.
There it is.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, so that was in its second week. It pulled in $7 million. The third in a horror franchise that we have talked about on the podcast is at number two, which is nuts that they would release a horror film in March.
Yeah, that is.
Especially a franchise.
We said we've covered it?
Not all of them.
But we've covered one of them.
Covered it.
One of the Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
Nope. Try again.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
But which one?
Two. Dream Warriors.
Yes and no. It's actually three Dream Warriors. Two is Freddy's Revenge.
Freddy's Revenge. God.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Number three is, right in the, 87, it's right in the middle of a bunch of these movies coming out. It's a war film.
Huge Full Metal hit. Jacket.
Oh, yeah. Full Metal Jacket.
Platoon, yeah. The biggest one.
87?
87.
Yeah. We also covered that one. I thought, yeah.
I think it came out in...
Well, Full Metal Jacket was also 87, wasn't it?
No, that was 90. It was a full 10 years after The Shining.
Yeah. So, but it was right after Platoon. It was like the people called it the flip side of Platoon. It was like the other side.
Yeah, it was kind of like when they were kind of being done. But everybody was making... Vietnam movies in the 80s.
Google challenging you, Chase.
I mean, and then Full Metal Jacket was shot in like London or England, right?
Yeah, Full Metal Jacket, 1987. But it's not in the top 10, huh?
No.
I
could have sworn that was in 1990, but...
I don't know why I randomly remember that.
If you look at the palm trees in Full Metal Jacket, they're all dead.
Yeah.
Because he transplanted all these palm trees
from... Yeah.
Oh, well, really?
At that point, he was exclusively living in Britain because he couldn't come back to America because of his divorce.
Yeah.
And he owed too much money and all this kind of stuff. So he just ended up shooting everything.
Running from the law.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Number four is a movie that I don't know from Disney. Is this one of their live action ones? I guess so. It's called... Oh, this was probably originally not Walt Disney. It was probably one of their like Buena Vista or something. It's called Tin Men.
Tin Men.
A minor car accident drives two rival aluminum siding salesmen to the ridiculous extremes of man versus man in 1963 Baltimore.
That's not a real movie. That's one of those.
That is a movie that does not exist.
That is a fake movie right there.
Vaguely remember.
That's a money laundering movie. That's cartel money right there. That's
it stars Danny DeVito.
Oh, wow.
And Richard Dreyfuss. This movie doesn't exist.
That does not exist. I got to see that poster, by the way. We got to post that poster. Yeah, and you know what? We have to cover that movie if we can even find it.
There it is. Here's the poster.
Really?
The American dream changes. These people who sell it don't.
And Barbara Hershey, third lead.
Yeah. Barbara Hershey.
Wow.
Pre-Beaches.
Yeah.
Or Beaches might have come out.
That's a great poster, by the way.
I feel like they had the name. They optioned the name like 20 years before the movie, and then they finally just slapped it on.
Yeah.
I thought it was a prequel to Tin Cup.
I thought it was a prequel. I thought it was a prequel to Pushing Tin.
Oh.
That was the Billy Bob Thornton. Air traffic controllers.
Yep.
Movie about okay.
Air Tin Cup though, filmed in Houston.
Ooh.
Tin Cup was?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, the golf stuff was filmed out in Kingwood.
Wow. Okay.
His golf thing. All right. Then number five was Angel Heart.
Pacino.
Yes. Yeah.
De Niro. Angel Heart with Lisa Bonet.
De Niro. Yeah.
It's like some
controversy
about that movie, I think, at the time.
P.I. is hired to call himself Louis Cypher to track down a singer that's
his favorite. Oh, my God, dude. That's
amazing.
That
movie walked so Devil's Advocate could
crawl. Oh, there we go.
All right. Some Kind of Wonderful. And what else is in here? None of these. Oh, number 14. Beating Air. Oh, wow. This was released the same day as Evil Dead 2.
What?
Evil Dead 2 was released this same day in 310 theaters. It made $800,000.
Oh, as Raising Arizona?
As Raising Arizona.
Cool.
Wow, I did not know they were the same fucking day. They were fighting each other.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That's probably why they don't talk
politics.
Anymore.
No, politics there.
Wait, do they really not talk anymore?
No, they do.
Oh, okay.
Wow, I did not know that. That's something that like I feel like I should have known.
Yeah, for sure.
But
and
yeah,
you don't.
So, wow.
And you didn't.
I want to go to the wide release day, though, which was April 17th. Because that was a better... So let's see here. Lethal Weapon had dropped to number 6. Platoon had dropped to number 7. But Raising Arizona, on the wide release, it pulled in at 8.
Oh, okay. So it made the top 10. Very cool.
The number one movie at that time was The Secret of My Success, which is...
Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox, right when he's popping, man.
Yeah. I've never heard of that. Surprise, surprise.
It's not great. Cool. No, wait. Opportunity Knocks is the one that's not great. Actually, they're probably both not great. One of them is like a little rapey. Maybe both of them.
I think all the movies in the 80s.
The 80s. It's a little rapey. Oh, you mean it was from the 80s?
Yeah.
Every time someone says Opportunity Knocks, I always think of when the Beatles released Yesterday, and it was the first like song where only one Beatle was on it, and the other three Beatles were kind of jealous of Paul for that. And so when they played it live on television, George Harrison, and like you can find the audio of this because it's like part of one of the ones they released, but it's one of the best like digs ever, because he's like we'd like to do our next number, it's just one of us, so for Paul McCartney of Liverpool, Opportunity Knocks, and he just like, and then he's like, here you go. It's like just his way of being like, here's your chance, Paul, or whatever. It's funny. Yeah. And then when he finishes it, John gets on the mic and goes, thanks Ringo, that was wonderful, and then they go, like, dicks, dude, total dicks. Anyway,
looks like a lot of words. Yeah.
Anyway,
you never miss a chance to do your Liverpool.
Yeah, I know, accents. I know. If I have any chance to talk Beatles, I'm taking it.
It's such a treat to be here in person. To witness it.
Like, oh, that's how he does it. Oh, okay.
So I'm just looking at the rest of the things that came out that week. Project X, which is the most 1980s sounding film. Matthew Broderick.
Wow.
An Air Force pilot joins a top secret military experiment involving chimps, but begins to suspect there might be something more to the mysterious Project X.
And that actually reminds me, that was the code name for Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band before that. No, just kidding. All right, that's it.
Shooting a movie Academy with animals, shooting a movie with babies.
Yeah. Crocodile Dundee was out.
Yeah,
Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, shit.
Ooh, man, Evil Dead did not have the multiplier that Raising Arizona did.
Well, see, Chase, you were...
Evil Dead 2 is at $3 million by this point, and Raising Arizona is already at $8 million. So who's the real winner there?
Well, I mean, obviously, the Raising Arizona.
I mean, us, because we get to see both.
We get to see both, that's true. Yeah. The people are the winners, yeah.
All right.
I do just want to say that before we started this, you were all like, wow, the movies that came out at this time were all so great. And then you literally just listed like 5 that I've never heard of before. So well, it was a little bit of a letdown, but
Secret of My Success was a big one.
Let's just say that that's not getting to 1994 territory. Okay.
No,
you know,
but
no,
but,
yeah,
I think 99 might be the only one that can like kind of compete.
Come
with
close
that.
To that, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, you might be right. Okay, well,
obviously it's December 2022 because you have Avatar: The Way of Water. It's the best movie of all time.
Right.
Keith said it himself.
What are we doing?
What? why are you messing with this? Sorry. Are we still recording?
Yes,
have we been recording since I left?
Yeah. We are, I promise.
I just remember...
Excuse the microphone noise, people.
Talking with TJ, and then from there on, I was just like, wow, my brain is gone.
Yeah.
Like, I am talking to an adult baby.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And my mind is blown.
That was an all-time movie gap moment right there. That was a treat for the gappers, man. Keith, you brought it, man.
Hey, I try. One other... just before I forget.
Maybe
a little constructive... not criticism, but a suggestion.
Yeah.
As a listener... have you guys sort of, I think it would be helpful, at least for me, to discuss the movies that are definitely coming down the pipe.
Oh, yeah. Like maybe. Oh, you're right. We've been thinking about this.
And worked on it, and then when we get on mic, it doesn't happen.
We fucking forget.
Yeah. Which it also doesn't...
But that's a good...
Doesn't matter as much. Yeah. What I need to do is start posting it on Instagram more.
Yeah.
But we can also... We can definitively say next week, stay tuned for Crank.
Crank.
And get Crank ready. Watch that. If you want to join us on the discussion, watch Crank. It'll be a fun one.
Yeah.
But that's a good point, and we should actually start doing that at the top of the app.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
At least this week,
at the top and the back.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, that is a good note. Note taken, and we try, and then we forget because we are bad at business.
We are BAB. Call us Babs.
Bad at business.
Call us Babs.
All right,
Chief Boney Cliff Babs. What's that
reboot,
from?
Reboot recap. What?
What was that from?
I don't know.
Home Alone 2. You call yourself a movie buff. Anyway.
I just don't listen to you. That's what was
it. It is apparent. It is apparent.
Reboot. Recast.
Reboot.
Recast. This is a 3-hour episode now. All right. Nicolas Cage. Who's going to play High?
This is difficult. This is difficult because he's...
High!
He's iconic now in that role. I remember on Sixth Street for Halloween, one of the first times I saw somebody in a unique costume was dressed up as High.
He had a
panty on his head, and he had a thing of Huggies.
Yeah.
Huggies, and he had a fake gun, and he was running around Sixth Street pointing the gun at people.
Oh, my God.
maybe.
Not get away with that.
Yeah, maybe not.
Like, and then you went up and asked him, who are you supposed to be? And he was like,
High!
Excellent.
Yeah. Trivia, what does H stand for?
Oh, there's Herbert.
Herbert, yeah. Yep. Yeah, like you're loving Herbert.
Yep, you're loving Herbert. That was great. And then, yeah, I didn't know that her name was Edwina either. Edwina. Yeah.
Which is still a strange name.
Right. It's pretty.
Is it?
All right. That's a good question, though. Who is today going to be?
Nick Cage.
Yeah, right.
Like a frenetic, ne'er-do-well, stupid, but smart, man, street smart.
You know what? We were talking about him earlier, and you guys might not agree with me on this, but I think maybe Austin Butler.
No, fuck that guy. He's not good.
Just because? Why? Because you don't like him as a person? No, you do this every time. That's not how a casting works.
He's literally
you don't
just
go,
Elvis now.
You don't go. I don't like this guy as a person. So I'm not going to cast him.
He can't do it. He can't break the Elvis.
I think there's a lot of parallels there that could work.
He's done.
I'm just putting that out.
There. His soul. He sold his soul.
I'm just putting that out there.
I think. I had one before.
Come on, Chaz.
You said Austin Butler. Now I can't think of anything. I don't know.
Well, he's a stubborn fucker, this one.
I know. Holly Hunter. Now.
Julia Garner.
I hate to say it.
Come on.
That's a ringer.
Yeah.
That is 100% right on the nose.
Right.
You guys spent like 15 minutes during the Fargo podcast debating Julia Garner for replacing Frances McDormand's
character. Yeah, because she couldn't do that. That's not the right part.
I still think she could, but this one, for sure, we agree.
Like, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Straight up.
So who would work well opposite her as High? There's got to be somebody good in there.
I said someone that probably could. No. Already.
No.
All right, I'm pulling up my IMDb 100.
He's a little old for it, but like honestly, wow, I cannot pull any names today.
Well, actually, I just found someone in the IMDb 100.
What?
He's Brendan Fraser. He's a recent riser.
He's looking at all the Golden Globes.
He's only done indie stuff before. But he is on here.
Johnny Depp.
Keith Wong.
Hey. Yeah.
I don't know. A little old.
A little old. China don't crack, man. Come on.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't see color.
Right.
I just see people who are good at math.
Okay.
No, Robert Pattinson. But he seems like he might be a little too old for this one, too.
You know what? Ooh. Good. Well, he's still slight of... Nah, maybe not. I was going to say Daniel Radcliffe.
But yeah.
Probably not.
Although he's like...
But he's good now, yeah, dude.
And
he's
him really and good. I would love to see him and Julia Garner play these parts together. Yeah. I think that's a home run.
Wait a second though, but what about like
because they're both little.
Well, maybe they're too old.
If we're going multicultural and not casting by color,
right?
A young John Leguizamo, frenetic, crazy, running around.
A young one.
Unrecognizable, unknown. Indiana.
You're talking like Pest era.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luigi era.
Because you want someone who can play serious too. Because ooh, when he says serious lines, you buy it.
You switch the John Goodman character up. So like a totally different take on that. And you put in, what's the guy's name from Ant-Man?
Michael Peña.
Michael Peña. Like Michael Pena that. And who else? Who's the other? Like, I'm trying to think of who would be fun to play with him as Evel. Like if you get Michael Pena and then like a real tall thin guy.
Oh, you're talking about for the John Goodman part?
Yeah, so Michael Pena plays the John Goodman and then the other, like the leader of the two dumb guys. And then the William Forsythe, which by the way, do you know who William Forsythe?
I mean, I've heard the name, but...
That we've talked about before?
I don't remember.
Has to do with Elvis and how you were wrong.
I was wrong about
Devil's
something?
Devil's Rejects.
That doesn't sound right.
You were wrong that wasn't funny.
Was that William Forsythe's part?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was Sheriff Waddell.
Yeah, that just was so forced in there. It just did not need to be in that movie.
Didn't it, though? Didn't it?
It is. It has been determined, and the Gappers agree, I'm sorry to say.
But here's the thing, Nathan Jr.
Well,
100% with a bullet, I know.
I think I know where you're going with this, and I gotta say, I 100% agree.
Do you?
Do you? Yeah. You got the? You got some ideas, yeah. Keith?
No, y'all don't.
No.
TJ Kuhn now nom in space.
Listening to The Movie Gap on the Cross the Streams Media Network.